This is the Things That Matter podcast, episode number 2. Welcome to the Things That Matter podcast, where we talk about real issues and big topics. If you love getting involved, learning about causes, giving back, or just listening to interesting interviews, this is the place for you. And now the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Things That Matter podcast. Today, I am really excited to be interviewing my friend Elizabeth, who I have known since I was 12, so we go way back. And today, we are going to be talking about ovarian cancer. September is Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month, and sadly for all of us, Elizabeth has a very personal experience with ovarian cancer. Her sister Jennifer was diagnosed at a very young age and sadly did not win the battle. So, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here and being brave enough to talk about Jennifer and her story.
Thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity, so thank you for having me.
It's really strange interviewing a friend. I'm used to not interviewing people that I know or people that I don't know. So, you know, there's no like weird pretenses, but I'm like, Elizabeth knows what I look like and what's going on here. It's weird. But anyway, thank you very much. And sure. Can you just, ovarian cancer is one of those things that I don't remember hearing very much about as we were growing up and starting through our medical. Now, I heard about it more, I think, because I also had an aunt who passed away when I was only 2 years old from ovarian cancer. So it was something that was talked about in my family. But outside of that realm, I don't remember it being something that my doctors ever talked to me about or anything. Can you tell us about, like, what happened with Jennifer and how, because she was 30 when she was diagnosed, right?
She started seeing, and hindsight is always 20/20, as always, but she started seeing signs, and not that there are really any overt signs, but she started seeing signs when she turned 30, and she had gained a little bit of weight. She was always very tall, very small-boned, but very tall, and so she had gained an extra 5 pounds, and, you know, the doctor basically told her, well, you're getting older, and it's just a little bit harder. I think all of us can really relate to that. So she didn't really think anything of it. And she had one evening, several months later, she had a very intense pain in her abdominal region, very intense. She was doubled over, and she ended up having to go to the emergency room. And they initially thought, by looking at her symptoms, that she had appendicitis. And when they did further testing, they found out that she did not have appendicitis and that it might be an ovarian cyst. And, of course, that was not the case either. And what they found out was that she had a tumor on her ovary, and one of the fluid-filled sacs of that tumor had burst.
Ow.
And, you know, my sister, even, you know, sadly, she didn't win the battle, but for so many women that have ovarian cancer, there are no signs. There are zero signs. There's discomfort. There's, you know, you feel gassy. You gain a little bit of weight. You know, all these things that I think women in general just kind of pass off and don't make a big deal about. If that sac had not burst and caused her pain, she never would have known until it was way too late. So we were lucky in the sense that we had caught it at an early stage.
So, okay, so they determined that she had the cyst that broke, and then what happened from that point?
So from that point, they really weren't sure what type of ovarian tumor she had. It was a very, very odd tumor, but it was growing around her ovary, so she had one surgery to remove an ovary, and several years later, and she went through a whole host of chemo treatments, inpatient chemo treatments, some experimental chemo treatments where they would fill her entire abdominal cavity with a plutonium heavy metal and basically pump her abdominal cavity with this chemo and rotate her bed so that it would wash her entire cavity to try to get rid of any latent cells. So she went through a whole host of chemo treatments early on and enjoyed a a pretty decent period of remission for about 2 years. And then there was a very small tumor that showed up on her abdomen. And it had started to spread over, throughout her abdomen. And so she ended up having hysterectomy. Maybe in 2009 or 10. She was diagnosed in 2005. So she had a hysterectomy probably at the age of 36 to try to remove any threat of it coming back and spreading.
I remember, I might not have the details of this correctly, but did you say that at one point in time she had a tumor the size of like a football removed from her abdomen? Was that Jennifer or someone else?
She did. Yeah. No, that was hers. You have a good memory. when they first found the tumor back in 2005, it took the doctors 2 trays to remove the tumor. It was that big.
Wow.
And it was shocking to me because my sister was very tall and very willowy. I mean, she was not overweight at all. And I don't know how in the world that thing had not exposed itself, but it took them 2 trays to get it out out of the operating room.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you said she went into remission I would guess with a lot of women, because the symptoms are so silent that by the time they get to the point where they have identified it, it's spread throughout the body. Is that why it's so much so deadly as a cancer, that it's spread to other key organs and such?
It is. And one of the things, it's the fifth leading cause of cancer in women.
Uh-huh.
And, unlike, and not generalizing, but other cancers will start to show signs. Breast cancer, you'll find lumps potentially. There are other cancers that will show signs. But with ovarian, there are no symptoms. You can look back and say, okay, yeah, I can see that now. I can see why I should have been concerned. But there are things like you eat and you get full really quickly.
Right.
Okay, well, that could be a host of things.
Right.
You could be sick. You could be constipated. You could be just not hungry. A lot of women would brush that off. I know I would. Gassy. I would brush that off. I mean, depending on how many beans you eat or how, what your level of fiber intake, you probably brush that off as well. Unexplained weight gain. And I think, my sister's case is very rare in the sense that most women get cancer between 55 and 65-ish.
Right.
So being diagnosed at such a young age, one of the symptoms is gaining weight and not really understanding why. Well, when you get older, of course, you can explain that away too. So you don't,
right.
That's really cause for concern. So all of these symptoms were present, but, and I think for Jennifer, and I think for a lot of women, there's no pain a lot
right.
of times. There's no pain. And they're just things that if you're bloated, well, might be your period. There are all these symptoms that, you'll have, and you can attribute those to something very common.
Right.
So that is the problem. And standard, one thing I know that I learned, and I've learned a tremendous amount from this, is that when we all go in for our pap smears and our pelvic exams, you cannot detect ovarian cancer that way. You can detect cervical cancer and some other cancers that way, which is great, but you can't detect ovarian cancer that way. So the testing is very, unless you get very aggressive with looking for it specifically, some of these standard tests are not going to pick up on it, which is very interesting to me. And I'm hoping as time goes on that there are going to be advances with the technology used to identify things early on for women.
Right. Do they have the BRCA genetic mm-hmm. testing for mm-hmm. breast cancer. Do they have something like that for ovarian cancer? Do you know?
They do. They have a genetic test, and I'm blanking on it right now, but they do have a genetic test to show if you have the, if you're predisposed to mm-hmm. developing ovarian cancer tumors.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are a lot of studies that are looking at is the cause genetic? Is it only genetic? Are there some environmental factors? There's a hormonal component in there where your hormones also play a part in potentially developing or kicking off these tumors to develop. So it's so the test is there. It's just what to do with that information afterwards, because right. you may be predisposed to it, but does that mean that you should
right.
get a hysterectomy just to be on the safe side? And for some people, they may. For others, it's just good to know and stay on top of things. So so there is, which is great.
Well, I know my doctor thinks I'm crazy, but after Jennifer passed away, and of course with having an aunt, and I'm not sure, it's probably like breast cancer where it's probably more likely on your mother's side of the family than your father's, and this aunt was on my father's side of the family, but who knows? Anyway, I didn't care. I was having some of those same kind of symptoms, which, again, can be the same kind of symptoms after having a C-section and babies and all of that stuff, so, you know, but I was freaking out a little bit, so I made them do... I made them do ultrasounds to make sure that everything was okay because, I mean, you know, well, there's no, if yeah, I mean, I was not going to take the chance.
Well, I think you're smart to do that because, and I did the same thing. I ended up, because of my history now, I requested a vaginal ultrasound, and that's mm-hmm. the only way
right.
that truly they can see if something is going on.
Right.
That's not surgery.
Right, but, exactly.
So it was, I think it's good to be proactive. It's, my sister was very, I learned a lot from her, and one of the take-home messages was that it's your body, and you have a right to, A, listen to it, and right. know when something is not going right, no matter if doctors, you know, not saying that they will, but if doctors... You know, just say, no, you don't need to worry about it. But if you still feel like there's something not right, listen to that and pursue it, because while you can read all the statistics in the world, you can look that, you know, you fall outside of the range of either age or what other parameters, there's still those cases that fall outside of that. And, you know, I think we take comfort in knowing some of these statistics, but it doesn't speak for everybody. And you know, it's good to be aggressive with your health and take care of your health. So I'll get off my soapbox on that.
No, I agree with you 100%. You have to be your own advocate because, I mean, the experience that I've had in the medical system, of course, I'm very, very biased and negative about it, but I have found that if you don't push the issue, the doctors certainly aren't going to.
No,
so.
No, they're not, and it's and they can only go by what they know,
right.
And what they've seen, and guide you accordingly. And you know, you may not be an expert, but you're certainly an expert on how you're feeling.
That's
and
right.
what you're seeing and what you're witnessing, and that should be the first thing that you listen to is yourself and your body.
So she was able to have the tumors removed, and then she had chemotherapy, and then you said she had about 2 years of remission?
She did. She had about 2 years of remission. She got married during that time. She was in my wedding. We had some really, really wonderful moments during those 2 years, and she was, you know, she grew her hair back. She was, you know, just enjoying and, you know, getting her life back together. She was working full time. She was, you know, just, you know, getting back out there and doing things. So she did. And there were no, she went in for checkups every couple of months, if not every month. So she went back in for tests and to stay on top of things. And that's how they found, when it came back, that's how they were able to find it. And so, you know, she, and when she got it again, it was the end of 2008 or first part of 2009. She went through another round of chemo, and she started to have lymphedema because they'd taken out some of her lymph nodes, and so she was starting to have pretty terrible lymphedema in her legs, and that's the swelling because your body's not able to flush out toxins and move fluid basically throughout your body when you take out those lymph nodes, the lymph would actually pool in her legs, and so she had to be, you know, her quality of life started to go go a couple years before she passed away, and eventually she was admitted to the hospital because she was having some complications, and this was January of 2012, and they did a CT scan and saw that it had spread to her kidneys and to some other organs, and it was really aggressive at that point. And that's when they basically had told her that she had no more than 3 months to live at that point. And so we brought her home to Columbia, and she was under hospice care until March when she passed away.
Right after she turned 38, right?
Exactly. I don't really know how to state this other than just it's very weird, I guess, or interesting, but she passed away on March 15th, 2012, and that was 7 years to the day that she was diagnosed, which,
wow.
Eerie, I guess.
It's weird. It's crazy.
So it's very, very, very interesting. But yes, she fought a long 7-year battle with some good moments in there.
Right.
There was definitely reason to hope for pretty much the whole time up until the very end. So.
And when she was going through all of this, did the doctors, did they tell her like the statistics for reoccurrences with ovarian cancer, or you know, did they expect it to come back, or were they optimistic?
Well, I think they were to a point. I think with most tumors, catching it early, as with any cancer, is, you know, it puts your chances at survival at a much higher level.
Right.
Her tumor, and I'm going to sound incredibly ignorant because I don't know all the ins and outs, but not only did she have ovarian cancer, but she had the rarest form, one of the rarest forms, which is called a mucinous tumor. And they're not, while there are plenty of wonderful oncologists and people who specialize in the gynecological cancers, they're only a very small one or two specialists that focus on mucinous tumors because they're so unknown. Their behavior is not well studied. And, you know, of course for hers, not only is that rare, but most of those tumors are benign, and 15% of those are malignant. So she had the rarest of the rare tumor type. So I don't think, not, the doctors were wonderful, but I think this was kind of territory that was not as well researched. So I don't know specifically if they gave her any particular stats based on this, based on her tumor type. And I don't know that for sure.
Well, she was she was a great girl, and it's really unfortunate that she had like all the worst of the worst stacked against her. But well, I want to talk about some of the good that's come out of it, and you know, it takes a long time, I think, sometimes to see the good. But
it does.
With you know, you've now got a whole group of women who are eagerly advocating for more awareness about ovarian cancer, and let's talk about Handbags for Hope.
Yes, and I will say for the record that one of those wonderful women is you.
Well,
so I'm so glad you're part of this group. Handbags for Hope is a fundraiser that is organized by the South Carolina Ovarian Cancer Foundation, and it takes place, I think this is their 8th year doing this fundraiser, and I think I've been to all but one. And
so
they
brand new the first year we went, huh?
Yes. And they have done amazing things in the years since they started. They do a fantastic job, but what they it's basically a silent and a live auction. There are plenty of purses that you can bid on throughout the evening, and all the money goes to the foundation that can then be in turn gone to patient support care for patients in South Carolina. So it's a local effort that goes back to local patients and efforts for families and things like that. So they do a wonderful job, and we've had a lot of fun the past few years. Some of us have gone home with new purses. Some of us have gone home with USC jerseys and basketballs and things like that. But this year we put together a donation for the auction, and it's called 30 Shades of Teal. And the play on words there, it's a completely PG-related auction item, not like the 50 Shades of Grey that it's supposed to be making, kind of poking fun at. But it basically came out of the idea that I wear a piece of teal every day in September, and I have since my sister passed away in 2012. And it may not be obvious to anybody else, but I wear a piece of teal to honor her and this month. So I mentioned this idea to a group of wonderful friends, and what's come out of that is now a package that has 30 teal items that you can either wear or use. Some things are like jewelry that we have. Other things are specially designed champagne and jamberry wraps for the month of October. But it's designed so that you have 30 options throughout the month to either wear or use, and it will be in the live auction of September 24th. So we're hoping to raise money for the foundation, and and we had a lot of fun doing it too. I won't shy away and say that too. We had a lot of fun putting this together. And the title comes on a humorous note, I think, is that I can't tell you how many people aren't sure if a color is actually teal.
Yes.
So we came up with this this 30 Shades of Teal because I know I've looked at something and I'm not exactly sure, is that truly teal or what? So we kind of poked fun at that too, so that there's a range of teal shades represented in the package. So, but it's been a lot of fun we'll see who the lucky person is that goes home with it.
Well, it is nice that even though obviously the reason that we go to Handbags for Hope is not a good reason, it is nice that we're able to go and remember Jennifer and to have a really good time and to have some good laughs. And for anyone in South Carolina or even North Carolina, because it takes place up in Greenville, so North Carolina, Georgia, that are within driving distance, it takes place September 25th, right?
It is September 24th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Peace Center.
Yeah, and it's so much fun, and the tickets are only $25 unless they've gone up this year.
They went up a little bit this year. They're $35 this year, but that gets you in the door, and it gets you heavy hors d'oeuvres.
And less wine.
And yes. So it is, and you are under no obligation to bid from that point on. So even a portion of your ticket sales are going to go to help. So for $35, you can't go out to dinner for that much money.
No, and it's always so much fun. We've had such a blast there over the last few years. I haven't been able to make it every year, but I'm looking forward to going back again this year.
Yes, I'm so glad. And we have the jamberry wraps that I'm really excited about including this year with the teal ribbon. So thank you for helping to spearhead those.
Sure. It's pretty funny, though, because speaking of the 30 Shades of Teal, like I went out and I researched, right, because I was like, I'm not going to mess this up. It's going to be the right shade. So I'm out there finding, what exactly is teal. I color matched. I used a color picker to make sure I used the right color right. So I have to look at my nails almost every single day because it's so easy to go for turquoise or aquamarine or something like that. You're like, that's teal. And then I look at my nails. I'm like, it's not even close.
Oh, I know. I have this.
Very liberal with our teal.
Yes. And yes. I'm saying, the shirt I'm wearing today is definitely aqua, but I'm passing it off as teal today.
Sure,
because
why not? You know, because you know why you're wearing it. I've got to post my picture for today, too. getting that in there every day. But let's see, what was the other thing I wanted to ask you about? Oh, I know. The other thing that I really like that the South Carolina Ovarian Cancer Foundation does is the Bags of Hope. Mm-hmm. And one of these days when I get enough money, I would really like to sponsor some bags and buy some teal-ish nail polish and have them put them in. Because the one thing, and this is just a little plug right here, of course, the thing that I really like about the Jamberry nail polish is that it's 5-free. So it's a good quality, thick, long-lasting nail polish that doesn't have carcinogens and other cancer-causing grossness in them.
Great. That's great. And, you know, Alexa, you hit on something, and this you can edit this part out, but I know that they do that, you know, during the live auction to sponsor bags for $50 for patients. But I often wonder if we couldn't specify that this live auction, you know, 30 Shades of Teal goes directly to, the money goes to a certain number of patients. Or,
right.
Or I wonder if I couldn't request that because that might be kind of neat. But yes.
I started talking about it and then didn't even say what it was, but the Bags of Hope are for current patients, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, it's to give them hope and to give them some items to, I mean, everything from keeping them warm while they're doing chemo to making them feel pretty or, you know, those kinds of things, so.
Yeah, it's amazing how, and I know with my sister, too, I would send her something for each chemo treatment, and it was designed to do that. It was either slippers so she could be comfortable or a pair of earrings because, you know, when you lose your hair and you lose your eyelashes and you lose your eyebrows, you know, I can't imagine any of us that would feel really good about that. And not to sound vain, but, I mean, you know, I don't think any of us would feel especially pretty.
Right.
And so, yes, these Bags of Hope are designed for that. Just designed to make you feel human,
right.
For lack of a better way of saying it.
If you're not in the South Carolina area and can't go to Handbags for Hope, but do want to help out in general, well, first of all throughout the month of September, the Ovarian Cancer Alliance, which is a national organization, is doing the hashtag 30 Days of Teal, and they're asking for people to do all sorts of different things from sending letters to your legislators, asking them to bring more awareness to this, to just wearing something teal or whatnot. Or you can join our 30 Shades of Teal, which is literally, 30 Days of Teal, which is our 30 Shades of Teal, putting on something teal every single day to bring awareness to it. And you can find links on, I'll actually include them on the blog post when I put this up, that has links to both Handbags for Hope, where you can make donations to the bags or to the organization, and also to the National Ovarian Cancer Alliance. So
that's great. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Elizabeth, so much. I know it's never easy to talk about. Those were some really, really, really rough years, and I really appreciate you sharing the story, and just know that Jennifer lives on with all of us, especially in September, but all the time.
Yes. Well, thank you, and I will say this, that going through things like this, as a family member, not necessarily, I mean, as a patient too, but as a family member with someone, it's often been said that it's harder on the people around you than the patient themselves. And just because people around you don't really know what to do and how to help. And I will say that having such a strong network of friends was really, for me personally, what got me through and still keeps me sustained. And that has been just a blessing in and of itself that has kept me putting my feet on the floor every day. So thank you for the opportunity. This was my first podcast. So.
Oh, yay. Well, now you're not a newbie anymore. You can add it to your add it to your resume.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. And, Alexa, thanks so much and for the questions and the opportunity to talk about this disease and opportunities that are happening this month.
Definitely. I can't wait to see what you're wearing today. All right.